This is the Norris Group's Real Estate Investor Radio Show, the award-winning show dedicated to thought leaders shaping the real estate industry and local experts revealing their insider tips to succeed in an ever-changing real estate market. Hosted by author, investor, and hard money lender, Bruce Norris.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and today our special guest is Tony Alvarez. And Tony's been a friend of ours for a long time, REO mentor, outspoken investor, and we're glad to have you here, Tony.
Thank you very much, Bruce. I'm glad to be here.
So how are you spending your time right now? I know you have a place in Oregon, and you still have a place in Lancaster?
Well, actually, I keep a small apartment in Lancaster now. Okay. I sold the house I had there.
Okay.
But most of my time is in Oregon, in Grants Pass.
Okay.
I still have also the other larger house in Smith River, which is out on the ocean, still in California. But I'm pretty much, I'd say about 80% of the time in Oregon, and then I'm down here because I'm still liquidating stuff.
Are you liquidating? I was curious about that.
Well, I'm transferring... I look at it as trading dollars, so to speak, or transferring my wealth to Oregon.
Okay.
Oregon is growing. I've heard about Oregon as an investment from you. I was already living up there to a certain extent. You know, I've been up there for 20 years. I've had a house. But I never really looked at it as an investment place. I never even cared to analyze their market. So I think it was in one of the presentations, I forget which one it was, that you did on market timing and stuff.
Yeah, it was probably 2004 or 5 where we talked about what's coming and where people go,
yes.
What California does.
Yeah, and you mentioned two states that had a positive net migration, if I remember correctly, and one of them was Florida and the other one was Oregon. And I remember thinking to myself, oh my God, I'm such an idiot. I'm living there and I'm not even aware of this. Mm-hmm. Okay. So it took you saying that to get me interested in my market, you know, where I'm already residing as an investment place. And I actually visited Florida and I went down and I saw what you were doing and I got a lot of ideas from that. And I considered going to Florida market, but I'm too lazy. I didn't want to get on a plane. And you know me, I got to see the things. I got to touch the buildings. You know, I got to be involved. And so I said, well, Oregon's a natural fit. And I still doubt it. I want you to know. I thought, come on, Oregon? Wouldn't I have heard about this already? You know, I was like, come on, Bruce. Don't tell me I know I'm not that bright, but this is getting a little bit far. And so I went and checked it. And the same thing, the same dynamics that were affecting the Florida market were affecting the Oregon market, Southern Oregon, to be exact. And so... I immediately started selling some things that I didn't want to own anymore in the Antelope Valley market, and then 1031 exchanging to my local market in Grants Pass. Now, when I first started doing that, I want you to know, I passed on some great deals because I was thinking with my California brain, and I was upset that the numbers didn't work and this and that. Well, I don't realize, like, for example, when I started buying up there, a two-bedroom, one- or two-bath apartment – about, you know, 800 to 1,000 square feet, was renting for $700. I mean, that was top rent.
Okay.
Well, 2 years later, that rents $1,000. That's happening in the marketplace up there. So they were asking for a duplex. They were asking like $270 for two 1,200 square foot units, nice units, you know. And I'm thinking, this is absurd. You're getting $1,500 a month rent. I'm not paying that.
It's like Orange County, it seems like.
Yeah. But then within a year's time, the rents were $900 and then $1,000. For that particular unit that I'm thinking of, the rents have gone as high as $1,200 now.
Okay.
So it's crazy. Now, what's driving it is over 50 folks, mm-hmm. and also the medical community,
sure, the
supporting.
Caretakers. Yeah.
Yes.
See, I didn't. That was an accidental benefit for me because in Leesburg, I thought the senior would be my renter.
Right.
That was in my head. The caretakers, when you're 65, you have two caretakers. When you're 85, it grows to 7.
Wow.
So those group of people that are coming there by the thousands get multiplied by 2 times 7 during their 20-year journey of being elderly. And those renters are always nurses or somebody connected to the medical
field?
Tell
me. Listen, we got. I'm actually now buying specifically to service I think they call them temporary nurses or whatever. Like they come through and they're there for a contract time, 6 months or a year, 2 years sometimes. Doctors are doing the same thing, by the way, because they have those groups, medical groups, and they'll actually hire doctors. The guy, I'm renting my house in Smith River, the 4,400 square foot, two-story thing, doctor. Young guy, he's in charge of the Crescent City, he's in the Crescent City Hospital, and that's right on the border of Brookings, Oregon, so that's kind of a different area. So he works in California, but he likes to fish in Oregon, so my house is right in the middle. Mm-hmm. I rented it to him. He's actually from India, and his wife, he's a doctor. His wife is just finishing her studies to become a doctor. The father's a doctor. The mother's a doctor. The brother's a doctor. One time I went there, and there was like all the rooms. There was people in all the rooms. I'm saying, what the heck? You renting out my place like a hotel? Because there's only him and his wife, right? He said, no, these are all my family members. They're all studying up here because it's so quiet and nice. He says, I got them all convinced. They all actually live in Ventura County down here, but they go up to Smith River to prepare for their boards and whatever, So I said, I got to raise his rent because he's got that many doctors, coming up, I got to start charging him by the room. But yeah, it's been a great experience. And for example, a fourplex that I bought the very first month after I woke up to this, I paid $325, and I thought that was a lot. There are 4 two-bedroom units. You can't touch that right now for less than like $450, $475. And the rents are, average of $1,000 each.
Were you concentrating more on getting the right inventory than buying it at a big discount?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And I quickly found out that the discount thing,
with a kind of free money.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So I had to, when I tried to explain that, I realized, okay, I couldn't explain this to somebody too well. So I just left. I didn't worry about that when I'm dealing with the real estate agents and stuff. My biggest hurdle was I wanted to find the right management company.
Right.
Because I had managed my own stuff for so many years. It's very difficult for you to trust someone else, or for me anyways. But I was blessed after interviewing every management company in Grants Pass. I landed on one guy who argued with me the first time I sat with him. So I thought, okay, I like this guy, and we've grown, and we still argue, but we do lunch, every week and stuff. I've got all this equity. Now I can go there and I'm basically buying at a discount in my mind.
So you bought this for 50 and it's worth 200.
How do you make sense of that?
Yeah.
And trying to explain that to someone else is what I mean is when I sat down with him and he said, well, you want to lower the price. I said, no, I just need you to understand why I don't have any problem with that. I want A and B neighborhoods, A and B tenants. I don't want anything that could even come close to problematic for you or me.
Mm-hmm.
So
now, would you say you own that type of inventory in Lancaster?
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's the change.
Yeah. Even the best inventory that I own in Lancaster, okay, I don't want to own.
Let's talk about the journey of Lancaster over some time. So when did you start? When did you get interested in Lancaster?
That was back in 19, I think it was, I remember it was 1994, to be very honest with you. I just did some research on this for myself because I'm working on a book and stuff. And I actually started out in Lancaster in 96 towards 97. I was even later than I thought I was.
Yeah, because that's right after REOs is sort of depleted.
Right.
Okay. So I thought you had really gotten the contacts for REOs during that time frame. Was that true or not?
Well, I started out, the very first property I bought was I just went there recently and took a picture of it and talked to the guy who owns it now, was on Robina Street. And that's how we found out the date, because that was the very first property that I had purchased. And I think Sabrina figured it out as being 1996.
Okay.
Now, that was a HUD property.
Right.
And I bought that from an agent who, back then, they would allow them to put their signs up, even if it wasn't anybody's listing, but they could put their sign up.
Right.
And this woman had her sign up. I called her and she represented me. And after that deal, she told me she didn't want to represent me anymore because I was too crazy. And, I was on fire after I realized that I could do this. And it even shows Because I remember it taking me 6 months of my first deal, right? Keep in mind, I don't have a car at this point. I'm borrowing my dad's car, right?
Because I had gone
through, I had gone through bankruptcy and I was working at Shakey's Pizza, all this nonsense stuff that I was going through. But I get out there, I drive that. I found that house the very first day I drove out to that place.
Okay.
Made an offer that day.
Right.
Okay. I didn't have the money.
Right.
I make an offer that day. She represents me. We get the deal. I got to borrow $6,000 from my dad, you know, who would rather have pins in his eyes than do that. I just lost everything in real estate, you know, so you know, I want to borrow some money, dad, to get back in it. And then I turn around and sold it for like $69,000 or something. 6 months later, it takes me that long to find somebody to fix it. And it's an interesting story because, and we don't have time for me to go through it, obviously, but, you know, the first guys I meet aren't even real contractor guys. They lie to me about it. But they're so hilarious that I fall in love with them. Yeah, the guy who sells me that he's a painter shows up to paint the house, and he's in dress clothes, you know. And I said, "You're gonna paint today?" "Oh yeah. Don't worry about it." And when I come back, he's soaked in paint. You know, he's wasted 5 gallons of semi-gloss paint with a roller on acoustical ceiling, which is all over his head and all over his face. Yeah, it was a disaster. But I end up making a profit. So immediately I went, okay, hold on. This is too good to be true. I could buy a house here for $37,000 that I can rent for $800-$900. At that time, let's say $800 was reasonable.
Okay.
Right?
Now, so 96 is the bottom pretty much of the market.
Right.
So you're still – now, are you dealing with REO agents at that point?
Or no.
You're starting to?
No. I went to HUD direction immediately.
Okay.
Now, that was – they're everywhere.
Yeah.
You know?
Auctions
but
a daily list.
Well, auctions – no, I hadn't attended the auctions yet, but this was just HUDs that are coming out. Well, they call it auctions, yeah.
Well, HUD had auctions.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
No, I remember. But but I hadn't tapped that yet. This is just – I'm making pizzas. I just read the paper, and it says the foreclosure capital of the United States is Antelope Valley.
Right.
I'm driving distance away. I had done one appraisal in my life as an appraiser in the Antelope Valley and wondered, why would anyone want to live out here? But I'm, you know, locked and loaded in that market. It took one house to prove to me that this was real. Once that happened and I got the evidence in front of me, I went nuts trying to buy. And I locked a hard money lender, you know, who was Barry Cooper at the time.
Right.
I hadn't met you yet. And then I start going crazy. But what bothered me was I don't like to waste my time. And I found myself putting a lot of energy into driving HUDs and doing this. And I had to drive everything. I had to see everything. I've never been any good at, you know, buying stuff, you know, absent without really seeing it. Driving by the neighborhood or something, you know, I'm not one of those guys that does internet buying too well. So, but another guy makes a dollar more on the offer or takes a dollar less on commission and you're out.
Right.
Right.
It's a net figure. Yeah.
Or worse, the agent representing you drops the ball and doesn't cross a T or dot an I and they kick back the whole off. That really upset me.
Mm-hmm.
So I sat down one day after losing so many deals. I said, you know what? It doesn't matter how good I am at this. It doesn't matter. It's like a lock of the draw. You know, you're guessing kind of thing. So, and there was a lot of agents involved that were agents / investors, and they were not taking the commission. So you can't, you know, and you have no way of guessing, even if they were the same price as
you.
Yeah,
you don't know what the net is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I zeroed in on Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and those kind of properties.
And building relationships with the people that controlled them?
Yes.
Okay.
She was the first agent, the one who told me, I don't want to deal with you because you're making me crazy.
Mm-hmm.
She was a single mom. She said, I love you, Tony. You're great. And I know you're going to do great things. She didn't really believe that, I don't think. She said, but, you know, you called me up last night at 11:30. Okay, I'm in bed by 9. And you want me to make an offer on a house before HUD shuts down. Right? Now, fast forward. She says to me, you need to meet this guy. He's one of the top REO brokers in town. And he gives me the name of Don Anderson.
Okay.
Don Anderson and I go on to become as close as you can possibly be with someone in business or otherwise. He's just a really, really good friend.
And you buy him by dozens and dozens of houses.
We go nuts, okay. You know. And the first time I go to his office, his partner basically gets up from the meeting, pats me on the head and says, good luck with that. You know, because I told him the truth. I said, this is what I'm going to do. I'm broke, you know, but I got a hard money lender. And, you know, and really, if I was listening, if I was there listening to this guy tell me this story, I might have patted him on the head myself, you know. Yeah. Okay, pal, you need some medication, you know. But I went on to do exactly what I said I was going to do. And Don helped me accomplish that.
When you were buying these, you've talked about flipping, but I gather most of these you held.
I made the majority of my money, on the stuff I held. And the reason is, as I was buying and selling, because I had a $500,000 tax loss carry forward.
Okay.
And if you understand that kind of stuff, I had no reason to hold on to anything.
Okay.
I needed to build up my cash stores and I could do it tax-free. So I did that. And I focused on buy, sell. But, and I'm watching the market appreciate. And because I had been an appraiser and I understood values, I understood at least this. When the market gets beyond, let's say, a 10% or 15%, 20%, you know, if you ask a contractor, that's pretty good return for developing something new. So I would always look at what would it cost me to build this house today, mm-hmm. right? And I on the day that I bought my very first rental out there, I paid $37,000 on my very first property, I should say. I figured out what the rental rate was in case I got stuck with it. I figured out if I had 100% financing at hard money rates, if I had to, you know, actually hold on to this thing and make the mortgage payment on it and whatever. And it, I couldn't find a reason not to buy it.
You know? Another one and another one.
Yeah, you know, So it wasn't about whether I should, and I still get goosebumps thinking about it. It was about, oh my God, I felt like, you know, like you discover gold and no one knows.
No one else knows about it.
And it didn't matter if I talked, because I would naturally talk to other people. I'm convincing my broker guys, you need to get in this. You know, well, we can't buy our own inventory. Well, buy his, buy each other's, you know. So anyways.
Let's take a journey of a price.
Okay.
Okay. So you're buying these things for 35 or 40 grand in the mid 90s, 96 or so. You and I meet when? 2003?
Yes, around there. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And at that point, what had they, they'd gone to over 200, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. They had, I had gotten up to, I figured out I was at roughly 7.2 million in net in my pocket leaving town.
What was, okay, that's an interesting statement. When you started it, you had this goal of, okay, this is when I know I'm financially independent.
Yes, yes.
Okay, what number was
well,
that?
Well, and I have to tell you, at that time, it was a very bold goal in my mind because I really thought, you know, there was part of my brain saying to me, oh, come on. $1 million, 10 houses. I was going to buy them like at 30 grand or 40, whatever. I was going to buy 10 houses with a hard money lender. Try to work out a deal to where obviously my tenants are paying those off. 100% of the money was going to go down or whack down on that debt. And then over time, those 10 houses would get to be $100,000 each house, which wasn't that far stretch.
Right.
And my tenants were going to pay it off.
Right.
So I gave myself a 10-year goal. I can do this in 10 years.
Have 100 grand a year.
I can end up with 10 houses paid off.
Yep.
I'd be worth $1 million. Right. And I'd have $10,000 a month income, which would net out if I managed them myself to $7,000 a month.
Right.
That's all I wanted.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, I've never paid myself a dime more. I think nowadays I take $100,000+ a year because I have a 401k and about, you know, 25% of that or whatever goes into that 401k. But other than that, I've never lived on anything more than $1,500 a week. Of course, I have no debt. Nothing that I own has any debt on it.
Right.
And, you know, and when I do go to lunch and I pay, it's my company that pays for that lunch as opposed to my own pocket.
So what gets you most excited? Well, let's continue with the journey first.
Right, right.
So we meet, you decide to hold those properties and you're selling those at about 2006.
Right, I'm ready. Yeah, well, 2006. The only reason I hung on that long, to be honest with, and I've always discussed this any time I got a chance, is because I meet you and I had already failed in real estate. I had succeeded before, made a lot of money, and then when the market changed, I lost it all because I kept doing more of what wasn't working anymore.
Right.
Right. So I knew I had a glitch in my model. And now that I'm back in the market, I made the decision to come back into the market based on numbers again, buy low, sell high, right? Because I knew that worked and I knew how to do that. But somewhere along the line, as the prices are appreciating and they go beyond just appreciation, but they start getting into inflationary numbers, you know, where, and I knew what that was. I had already been with the
inflation. Like you're driving up to this house and go, why is this worth 200 grand now?
Well, yeah. But I had already felt the sting of when the market changes. Intrinsic value gets beat up a little bit, but it always, the equilibrium, that always comes back to some reasonableness, right?
Right.
But anything above that reasonableness,
you can give that away pretty quick.
Yeah, fast. That's a haircut that's coming, and it doesn't matter what you think about it. So that was the thing that got me to search for you, was I was looking, there's got to be somebody who does this research, because I certainly don't know even know where to start. I mean, I, as an appraiser, I knew certain things. And I had heard about you, and I went and heard you speak. And the first time I heard you speak, you came across as somebody who was no nonsense, honest. You know, you got asked a question in the middle of, right? The guy raises his hand and says, hey, we're apartment, you're at the Apartment Owners Association. You're talking about single families. What's that got to do with us? And I'm waiting. Okay, let's see what you're going to do now. You could have said anything at that moment, you know, and I know I've been in positions like that before. You could have said, hey, probably the same thing. Next question. Anybody else? Okay, let's go. But you didn't. You said, you know, and you laughed a little bit at yourself. You said, I really don't know. Everybody kind of chuckled. Now, can I continue? Yeah. And you went on with your presentation. That impressed me at that moment, because I knew you weren't about nonsense and BSing anybody. You were going to tell the truth to someone. If you're asked a question directly, you're going to respond of all the choices you have. And you've got a lot of choices. You're not a dumb guy, okay? I mean, I'm listening to you up there, and you know what you're talking about. You went straight to the truth of, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
You know? And so I followed you right away. Now you get me to stay in the market.
Well, what's interesting is you really had it all wired. You had like 50 properties on these sheets, and you had all this cash flow and all this stuff, and you were really ready to exit.
Yeah.
And it would just so happen I'm 9 miles away with a project. I'm dragging my feet, not even wanting to start it yet. So we're 9 miles away deciding two different avenues are the best.
Yeah.
And I just think, yeah, that was interesting, because I was waiting. I was looking at the number. The days on market in Lancaster and Rosamond were less than five. It was completely nuts.
But that goes to show you something, right? You would think that I, being in that market, experiencing success, would have known all of that. I had no clue.
Well, I was looking at the migration numbers, as you know.
Yes.
And Lancaster was the number one destination in the country. And I thought, would somebody drive 9 more miles to own a house than rent in Lancaster? So I had to wait until the rents went up and the prices exceeded my prices in Rosamond. Which is why I kind of started when I did, you know, because you didn't have a 200 grand house
right. In
Lancaster when I had a 200 grand house in Rosamond.
Yeah.
And we just built those little 12, 1300 square foot house because no one wanted to build that.
Hey, I own several.
You didn't pay $250.
No, I didn't, but I own several. Okay.
I think, okay, we only got about 50 seconds left.
Okay.
So what we'll do, we'll have two segments. So these prices escalated to multiples unfathomable, really over
right.
300 grand a house.
Right.
And you decided to exit. So part of what's interesting in my position is I do talk to very successful investors.
Okay.
And the philosophy is very different about what I'm going to do with this pile.
Okay.
Okay. And so maybe we'll start there, because what you did the first time, it doesn't sound like you're replicating this time. You sold everything.
Right.
And this time it sounds like you're selling to exchange. And land in a Mike Cantu rental situation where it's A properties.
Yes. Yes. Okay. No, exactly.
All right. Well, Tony, we've had fun, and I didn't even look at my questions. So I guess that's a good sign.
All right,
and we'll pick it up. We'll pick it up in the next segment.
Okay.
For more information on hard money loans and upcoming events with the Norris Group, check out thenorrisgroup.com. For information on passive investing with trust deeds, visit tngtrustdeeds.com.